I would now like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Dave D. from Tucson, Arizona.
My name is Dave DeVoy. I'm a grateful alcoholic. I always like to pause before I'm speaking at a meeting, make sure that I bring God along with me, and make sure that he's here with me and sharing the message that I have to carry. I guess I should have introduced myself earlier that I was from out of town, but I was kind of involved in my own thoughts of what I was going to say, and I didn't quite understand everything that was being said up here. So you'll have to excuse me for being a little bit of selfish and self-centered and worrying about how I was going to look. First of all, before I get started, I wanted to make sure, Mark Valdez wanted me to make sure that I mentioned his name. So, Mark, thank you very much. If any of you are here tonight and you think that you're probably the sickest person in the room, feel free to see Mark after the meeting, and you'll realize that you're not alone in this world. If I say anything tonight that you disagree with, I don't try to quote the book, but I might say some things that are in the book, paraphrased. If there's anything whatsoever that you might disagree with, my sponsor's here tonight. It's Jeff Y. Feel free to see him after the meeting, and if you need his phone number or anything else, there's some people around here that have that. You can certainly take it up with him. You know, it's an absolute privilege and honor and a pleasure to be back in San Diego to speak at this meeting. I was here for the first meeting that they had here. I'd like to tell you all that I was one of the founding members, but there's too many people here that know me, and they'd probably tell you that was a lie. So, but I was here at the first meeting that they had. I had a commitment. It was a very important commitment. I made sure that the parking lot was clean and picked up all the garbage in the parking lot. And trust me, I did it very, very well. I really want to thank, you know, we go through this process of getting sober, and in that process, we come across, there are men and women that allow us the opportunity to be a conduit for them, to find that spiritual path through the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and find that. And I'm so very blessed and fortunate that there's some of those men that are in this room tonight. And it says something in the book about one of the pleasures there is in life is seeing the lives that are rebuilt and watching somebody else get sober. And I can't tell you how humbling it is for me to stand up here and see that tonight. It truly touches my heart, and I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to come back here to San Diego, which I'm originally from Chicago, but you know, this kind of feels like home to me. And I think that the reason that is because this is where, whatever you want to call it, this is where I got sober. This is where I found a power far greater than myself. This is where I recreated my life here in San Diego. And to come back here is like walking in and being at home, you know? I want to thank the 10-minute speaker. Thank you very much. I enjoyed your talk. Welcome to the newcomers, those that identified themselves, those that didn't. If you didn't, it's okay, no big deal. I didn't either, okay? I've got a thing called an ego, and I know it's pretty hard to believe, but there's some men that will attest to that. Congratulations to the birthday people. 90 days, that's a big deal. 90 days without a drink is huge. You know, I'm here to tell you a little bit what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And not too long ago, about a year and a half ago, something like that, my mother passed away, and I went back to Chicago, and my brother had a bunch of boxes and stuff that my mother had, and they saved. And I was going through these things, and I found a report card from when I was in kindergarten. And written on the report card said, David has a problem conforming to the rules and draws attention to himself in an undesirable fashion. When I first read that, I thought, God, that's pretty harsh for a kindergartner, you know? I mean, my God, how could they do something like that, say something like that? And then I started thinking about it and thought, oh, I guess that's pretty much right on till today, you know? I grew up in Chicago, and unlike the first speaker, I'm an Irish Catholic from Chicago, and my family loved to drink. That's what we did. Funerals, weddings, birthdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, whenever there was a family gathering. Usually by the end of the family gathering, there were people that were never going to speak to each other ever again. There may be some blood, there may not be, some shit was broken, some stuff, you know. And, you know, when I grew up, I just couldn't wait till I was drinking. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't wait. It was like, wow, does that look like a lot of fun? Yeah, I mean, it was like, I just couldn't wait. It was, you know, it just seemed like so much fun to me. I can't tell you the first time that I had a drink. I don't know how old I was, but I can recall sitting in the basement of my cousin's house, drinking a Hams beer and smoking Pall Mall non-filters, you know, and loving it. And then usually go upstairs and everybody's kind of like passed out and look around and see what kind of half drinks were still laying there and finish those up and so forth and so on. And God, it was just, I just couldn't wait. I went to a Catholic school, and, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about the nuns and the priests, and you know, for some odd reason, I usually, well, I don't know, maybe drawing attention to yourself in an undesirable fashion, but I was always in getting cracked on the knuckles with the ruler or the pointer, or I was in the principal's office, or I was something, you know, and, you know, I think that, I really believe that they did the very best that they could to try to instill into me some kind of principles. You know, I think that they tried the very best they could. But, you know, there's a line in the book about being rebellion dogs are every step at first, right? And it was just, I just rebelled from everything. I just didn't like authority, and I didn't like what they were saying, and I didn't want to do anything that they wanted me to do. And, you know, that's just the way it was, you know, and I didn't really care because I was, you know, smart. You know, I mean, all my grades were good, you know, it's just like, I just didn't want to do what they wanted me to do. Um, You know, and I had a lot of friends as Boy Scouts. We were in the Boy Scouts together, you know, it just I grew up. I had a really good family. I mean, the family was, they did the best they could. You know, they really did in trying to raise me properly and instill in me the principles that should have guided my life. And I just kind of just rebelled from everybody. You know, that's it. This is what I do. You know, it's. You tell me to go this way, and I'm going to say, nah, you know what, I really think the other way is probably better, and it's quicker. And that's the way I go. I went through grammar school, and I wanted desperately to go to, I wanted to go to Catholic high school, only we couldn't afford it. My family couldn't afford it, and all of my friends were going to Gordon Tech High School, and I really wanted to go with them. And my family just couldn't afford it, so there was a school right across the street called Lane Tech, which was the public entity for the Catholic entity. And it was like, okay, then I really want to go there. You know, I really want to go there. And I applied to go to that high school. And the principal from my grammar school wrote a letter and said, nah, I don't think that you really want him to go to this school because we really don't want him representing St. Andrews at Lane Tech. And I ended up going to Lakeview. And I'd like to... that's a resentment that I had for quite a long time. It's a resentment I had for quite a long time. My mother and father owned a restaurant. And between the restaurant and the bar, there was a bar right next door. And there was a doorway. And you could walk through the restaurant into the bar, you know? And from the time that we first had the restaurant, I used to go into the bar because, you know, like I really wanted to participate in the bar, but I wasn't old enough to drink. But I could shoot pool, you know, and I'd shoot pool in there, and the guys would bet drinks on me and throw me some dollars here and there, and I'd shoot pool and beat everybody, and I just thought, God, I can't wait to be 21 to get in here and drink, you know. It's just like, This is where I really need to be. I used to, I even had a dream that, you know, I'm going to, when all this is done, when I get old enough, I'm going to buy a bar, you know, so that I can be like that owner of that bar. And I even had a name for it. It was going to be called The Answer. I really thought that was it. I was, you know, that was it. It was the answer. And in high school, my father died, and we thought he was killed in the restaurant. And it was 6 days before my 16th birthday, and I was devastated. And I can't tell you. I don't know. I still, to this day, I don't remember the funeral or anything like that. I had a lot of friends, and I know that I drank a lot. And I really became rebellious. High school was just Lane Tech. I mean, Lakeview High School wasn't for me. None of them people were even close to my intelligence. No, seriously, really. So I quit school, and I sat in the barbershop that was about two blocks from about a block and a half from the high school, and I used to watch the kids go by. And I got a job of some kind or another and made a few bucks and drank and partied, and 18 years old, I turned 18. I couldn't wait till I was 18 years old, and I knew that was going to be the day that everything was going to come together, because I was going to join the Army in Vietnam, and I was going to be a hero. You know? I knew that was what my calling was going to be in life, is I was going to be a hero. You know? I was always kind of a scared kid when I was growing up, but I never, you know, but I was always really, really loud and really, really forward and really, really arrogant, just to make sure that nobody could really, really see that I was scared, you know? And John Wayne was one of my heroes, and I knew that if I got into the military and joined the Army and went to Vietnam and I was a hero and I'd come home and everybody would put me on the pedestal that I truly believe that I should be at, you know? And I went to basic training and got through basic training, and we went through this Vietnam training, and I went, oh, Jesus. This isn't quite what I wanted to do. You know, this isn't what I was thinking it was going to be. And this is serious stuff. And man, these guys don't play around, you know. So being the smart guy that I am, I kind of maneuvered my way into a top secret security clearance, was transferred, got shipped to Stuttgart, Germany. I handled registered mail, which back then they handled all the cash and top secret orders and everything coming into U.S. Army Europe. I worked 12 hours on, and then I got 3 days off. And what a life I had there. I didn't have to report to anybody. I had free rein, and I was in Germany, and, you know, I could take the tickets that we got to buy liquor at the commissary, and I would sell the Jim Beam to the Germans, and I would make money off of that. And I just really and really had a good time partying really, really hard in Germany. I went into the Army as an E-1. 3 years later, I got out of the Army as an E-1. Went back to Chicago, and you know what? I just had a really, I bumped around different jobs here and there, and got a job and drank really heavily all the time. And I was really good at what the stuff that I did. And you know, when they when the heat started to get a little bit too much, because they wouldn't get rid of me. They wouldn't fire me because I really produced very well. And when the heat got to where I figured that they were going to fire me, I'd just quit, take a vacation for a couple 3 weeks, 4 weeks, month, whatever. One summer I took a vacation. I was collecting unemployment, tending bar at night, and spent the whole summer in the bleachers of Wrigley Field. God, I love that. I was collecting unemployment checks, working at a bar. Back then, you didn't tip the bartender. You always said, get me one and get yourself one. And man, I drank well. Yeah, they always had to, when I was on duty, they always had to buy extra Jack Daniels. Because I drank a lot of Jack. Beer was my liquor of choice. I drank a lot of beer, but, you know, shots of Jack were easy to do behind the bar. And you know, I love drinking. I really loved it. I really enjoyed it. I just, you know, I was in hog heaven. I was in the bars and just, you know, I never really had to be Dave DeVoy. I could be anybody that I wanted to be at those bars. You know, I just enjoyed myself and had most of the answers for all of your problems. Really. If there was something going on, if you came to me, I'm certain that I could fix it. You know, or at least tell you what you should do. You know, if you followed my instructions, great. If you didn't, well, you were a loser. I got transferred on a Dallas-Fort Worth. I lived down there for about 6 months. And, you know, Texas really wasn't the place for me to be. I was nothing but a goddamn Yankee down there in Texas, man. And it was from Chicago and as you can see, I still haven't lost my accent. Can you imagine what it was like 25 years ago? And Texas really didn't like me. So I met this woman back at my best friend's wedding, and she lived in Phoenix. And I thought, you know what, I should move to Phoenix, and I did. And we got married, and we had a little girl. And, you know, none of my habits really changed. You know, I just really loved the bars, you know, and I drank heavily. And she would say things like, you know, maybe tonight you don't want to go to the bar. And I'd say, you know, if you worked as hard as I did and you put up with as much stuff as I have to do on a daily basis, you'd be going to the bar too. And by the way, if you would just come with me, you would understand how much fun we're having. You know, I mean, this is not rocket scientists here. You know, you just come with me and we'll have fun. And eventually she got tired of my action and divorced me. And I was really angry about that, you know, and I drank more. And, you know, this is a kind of a pattern for me. I drank more, got more angry, and I thought, you know what? What I need to do is I need to move. So I moved to Tucson. I got a job in Tucson, and I moved there. And I worked for this company in Tucson. And then I would get aggravated because I would drive back and forth from Phoenix to see my daughter. And, you know, why wouldn't she just drive down to Tucson to bring her down to me? And don't you understand? And, you know, all of those things. And my habits and what I did just never changed. Everything I did was at the bars or I drank or, you know, it was a great ride coming back from Phoenix after I dropped my daughter off because I could buy a 24-ouncer and I'd finish that by the time, you know, maybe I got just before Casa Grande and then I'd buy another 24-ouncer and I'd finish that by the time I got home and then I'd stop at the bar, you know, and, you know, finish out the night. You know, there's something in the book about, you know, he says about, God, how did I get here again, you know? And I don't know how many times that I can recall in my life where I said, you know, it's been a bad day. I'm going to stop for one, you know, happy hour, you know, and because I got a lot of shit to do tonight. I got laundry. I got to clean the house. I got all kinds of stuff to do. But, man, I really need to have a beer. You know, I need to just wind down a little bit because, I never like to drink. I never like to take, you know, stop and get beer to take home because then I'm by myself. You know, so I'd stop at the bar. And then the next thing I know, it's like 10:30. Well, it's too late to do laundry and shit like that. So, you know, let's have another one. And then it's, well, Christ, it's midnight. Well, okay, well, you know. Yeah, let's have a couple more. Well, you know, maybe I'll just call in tomorrow. You know? And that's kind of the way my life I lived my life for a very long time, just like that. I can't tell you how many DUIs I've had. Somewhere around 5, something like that, 5 or 6. And there's many that I had that I should have had where I was let go. You know, I was let, you can go away. This is an amazing program that we have here. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like, you know, when you get a DUI, you got to go and you got to get this slip signed and stuff like that. So obviously I've had a couple of DUIs and I knew that I had to have these slip signs. So I've been to AA before, but I certainly never listened to anything anybody had to say. And usually I'd find some meeting that it was a lunch meeting or a breakfast or something like that and get the slip signed. And if I could slip out, I would do that. And I never listened to anything that anybody said. The last DUI that I had, I knew that pretty much I was going to go to jail. And I knew what I had to do. And that was what I had to do was go to AA, get a bunch of signatures signed on this piece of paper, and then I'll take that to the judge and show the judge that I really have a desire to get sober and, you know, maybe I can get out of this thing, you know? And I came to AA. And I went to a meeting, I couldn't find it. And then I went to another meeting and I couldn't find it. And then I went to another meeting, I couldn't find it. Now, I don't know exactly what was going on with you guys at AA and these meetings and so forth that you have hidden. But I couldn't find them, you know. And I found one. It was at a Denny's restaurant. It was at noon. And I knew that I could find the Denny's restaurant, and I knew that I would be able to find that. So I went to this Denny's restaurant, and they had an AA meeting, and I went there, and I listened, and I started to hear this stuff about this book and these 12 steps and all of these things, you know. And I got this, you know, I had them sign this piece of paper, and then they – I went back, and then there was another meeting, a breakfast meeting, and I kind of went to this breakfast meeting, and they kept talking about this book and these 12 steps, and you know, so I bought this book, and I read this book, and these 12 steps, and I thought, well, shit, this seems pretty easy, you know, so I did the 12 steps. You know, I was powerless over, well, kind of sort of powerless over alcohol. My life was unmanageable. Nah, not really. Maybe those guys, but, you know, I'm pretty much, I manage it pretty well, man. I've been doing pretty good for a long time all by myself. And quite frankly, I've been having a really good time. Now, I don't have a lot to show for it, but I'll be damned. I got my own business and, you know, I'm a businessman, and, you know, well, that doesn't quite apply to me. And, you know, well, the God thing, yeah, I can do that. And you know, making amends, yeah, I'm going to call my ex-wife, yeah, I'm really sorry for all the stuff, yeah, blah, 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 you know. And I started reading the book, and, it, you know, this agnostic thing, I didn't have to read that because it didn't apply to me. And that's what I did, you know, and I was feeling pretty good. I mean, seriously, it was pretty good. And I thought, well, shit, this is easy. And so I started to go to some other meetings. And I started to share with everybody how to do this stuff. You know, and it talked about getting a sponsor and doing all that stuff. And I thought, well, shit, I don't really have to, doesn't really apply to me. You know, and I did that for like 30 days and I got drunk, you know. I mean, I drank. But I still kept going back to these meetings. But now I knew that, you know, somehow or another this stuff doesn't really work. You know, these 12 steps and things like that, that doesn't really work. It doesn't apply to me, and it doesn't work. And you know, I'm a pretty smart guy, and if it doesn't work for me, I don't know how, you know, most of these people must be lying. You know, really. And I remember going to this breakfast meeting, and some guys here might be here that were at that breakfast meeting, and they'll remember this. I went to this breakfast meeting, and it's a men's meeting, and everybody was having a really good time. I mean, it was like it goes around the room, and everybody's sharing, and they're laughing, and they're having a good time, and they're grab-assing and talking and just having a ball, you know? And it gets to me, and I told them exactly what I thought of them. I didn't really think this was all that funny. This was some serious shit. And you don't understand that, man, this is my life, and you guys seem to be making a joke of this shit. You know, what? I mean, I got really upset. I have an anger issue that I'm still kind of dealing with sometimes. But I got really upset, and everybody that's here will know this, because what they did was, they laughed even harder and said, you know, Dave, we got a couple other meetings you need to go to, and you just keep coming back, and, You know, it'll work for you too. And I used to go over here to Water Walkers. And, I kept trying to do this thing on my own. You know, I kept trying to do it really hard. And I got a sponsor, and I tried to do these steps and so forth and so on. And I was sober for about 90 days. And I used to shoot pool, and tournament pool, and I was in the bar, and I was shooting pool, and I was about 90 days sober. At least that's what I recall. Probably shorter than that, but it seemed like 90 days anyways. And I was sitting in the bar, and I was shooting pool, and I was just, you know, that restless, irritable, and discontent. And I couldn't, and I wasn't winning, and the games weren't going my way. And I thought, you know, I need a little something just to calm the nerves. And I've been sober, and I think I got this thing under control. And I ordered a Heineken and a shot of Jack, and I ended up coming in second in the pool tournament. And I was sitting at the bar, and they called last call, and I looked up at the clock, and it was like 5 minutes to one. And I thought, holy shit, you are truly powerless over alcohol. That was the last drink I had. I realized at that moment that I was truly powerless over alcohol, and I thought that my life was over as I knew it. And I knew that there was no way that I was ever going to have fun again. I knew that all of these guys, I'm going to have to participate and see these guys on a regular basis that, quite frankly, man, Jesus, some of these guys, I don't know. But I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and through some kind of miraculous work, it got to me, and it was like, there was like 45 people in this room. And it came to me to share how, I don't know. And I completely fell apart because I knew that there was no way that I was ever going to be able to get sober and do this. And a man came up to me afterwards, and he said, be at my house tomorrow at 6 o'clock. We got a lot of work to do, Dave. And I thought, yes, all right, absolutely, no problem whatsoever. Man, I'll be there. You know, yes, all right. And the next morning I called him and said, you know, I was thinking about this 6 o'clock thing. You know, I got some stuff going on, and you know, and he took the time to talk to me, and I ended up going to his house, and we ended up reading this book, and we ended up going through these steps, and there's just like that. I used to meet him on a regular basis, and I used to go to his house, and we would talk, and he would say some things to me, and I'd go, but you don't understand, this is not, you don't understand. My case is a little bit different. And finally one day he said to me, he says, give me your book. And he took the book from me, and he wrote Bud in the front page, and he put a circle around a line through it. And he showed it to me, and he says, all right, you can never use this word again in my presence. Do you understand that? He was a very kind and loving gentleman. Never use this word in my presence again. And I looked at him and I said, however, but he was kind enough to take me through the book, and he was kind enough to show me the steps, and he was kind enough to be a conduit for me to that power that's greater than myself. You know, I can tell you that I am truly blessed. I have to tell you, though, I had a resentment about coming here to this meeting, okay? I used to live here, and I moved from here, and I moved to Tucson, okay? Now, why they couldn't ask me to come and share in July, I don't know. But it's nicer in Tucson now than it is here. You know what I'm saying? I like to play golf, and I come over here, and I got to play in the rain. I understand. But I'm staying. I'm truly a blessed man, and I had an opportunity to stay down in Pacific Beach this weekend, and I was doing a little jaunting today down the boardwalk, and I was looking out at the ocean and the just around sunset and thought to myself, my God, does life get, I mean, how can you get to this place? How does this happen? You know? I used to drink a lot, and I told you about bringing my daughter and back and forth from Tucson, from Phoenix to Tucson, and when I would bring her down to Tucson, I didn't know what to do with her, so I had some friends that had kids, and I'd go to their house, and, you know, the natural things that I would do would be to find people to drink with, and so I would go to their house, and we would drink, and when I got sober, she said to me that she said, I never was so scared in my life than the time that you drove me in your car, Dad. You know, when I was drinking, I would never think of that. I mean, it was just like, who, you know, that's what we do. I mean, you know, I was the designated driver most of the time because I didn't trust anybody else driving, you know. And, you know, because I could pretty much handle myself. You know, we go through these, taking these steps and finding that power that's greater than myself, finding God, is an amazing thing. You know, there's been a lot of things that have happened to me since I got sober, and I'd love to be able to share them all with you, but there's some miracles that have gone on for me. You know, in the process, we have these amends that we're going to make, and my mother was in a nursing home, and she suffered from dementia, and, you know, in my writings and all the, you know, terrible things that she did to me and was a bad mother and all of this stuff. And you know, and then I found out there was some parts that were mine. And I had to make these amends. And I thought, well, you know, I really don't, you know, how am I going to make an amends to her? She's, you know, she doesn't know who I am or even if I exist. And my sponsor would say things like, he would say things like, listen, just take the action. Okay? Just do the action, followed by shut up. Put your ass in a chair and leave your head outside. I don't care how you feel. What are you doing? Shit like that, he would say. You know, he's a kind and gentle man. And I had an opportunity. I went back to Chicago, and I says, okay, and I wrote the amends, and I went back to the nursing home, and I got her, and she didn't know who I was, and she didn't know have a clue what was going on, but I did what I was told to do. I took the action, and I wheeled her into the day room, and I sat down with her, and I said, Mom, I need to make an amends to you. You know, I'm an alcoholic, and I went through this whole litany of the amends, and she looked at me, and she says, you know, David, I'm really happy that you finally found this. I'm really happy. You have a family that you need to take care of, and I'm so glad now that you have realized your path. And then went about with, she had no clue who I was. And that's God working for me. You know, that was something to tell me that I'm on the right path. You know, it was giving me that direction of where I need to go and what I need to do. That is something that there's no money you can put on it. I don't know how to explain that. I don't know how to show that to anybody. I don't know how to tell anybody of that. You know, I don't know how that, but that was for me, it was like overwhelming, you know, to see that and to have that experience. My daughter, when I first made the amends to my daughter, I wrote her this letter and wrote her all this, and I gave it to her, and she kind of took it and went and threw it down. And I was like, whoa, where's the thanks, Dad? You know, hey, you know, I really appreciate this, and I'm really glad, and you're a wonderful father. And I didn't get that. And I went to my sponsor about it, and he goes, you know what? That's none of your business. You just do the actions. She suffers from a disease today that we have no idea what it caused it. There's the Mayo Clinic, and we've been through all of this stuff, and we have no idea how to, we've just done everything that we can possibly do. And, you know, you all have shown me how to be a father, how to be present, how to not take charge of the situation, how to not fix it. And I have a relationship with her today that is, it's really incredible. It really is that we can sit and talk and have a conversation, and it's just marvelous, you know? I can do things today that I never thought that I could do. I could pack up from San Diego and move to Tucson, not know anybody, not have a clue whether or not that what I was doing was the right thing to do. But I needed to be. My daughter lives in Phoenix, and she was going to ASU at the time, and I knew that I needed to be there. I needed to be part of her life. I needed to be the father. I needed to do that, what they call like that living amends thing, okay? So, and you know what? Everything has fallen into place for me. I mean, I have a job that I'm truly blessed to have. I like being there. I don't know if they like me being there, but I like being there. I make some fairly, decent money. I'm in the process of taking care of still, like the amends thing. You know, that goes on, and there's a whole IRS thing that's going on, and, you know, they want a lot of stuff from me and a lot of money from me, and they want a lot of, and I just do what you told me to do. You know, they don't want anything from me. They want their stuff. You know, and if I just keep doing what I'm supposed to do, just keep taking that one step at a time, one foot in front of the other, you know, God will provide. And that's about my experience. Everything that's happened for me here, that has been my experience. When I first got sober, my car, I was told to do certain things and pay my bills on time and stop taking your money to pay my bills. And my car was repossessed, and my sponsor said, so? Well, how am I going to get to the meetings? He said, walk. So that's what I did. I lived up at Navajo and Golf Crest, and I used to walk down here to Water Walkers. And I used to walk over to a meeting over here on Navajo, and I used to walk over to another meeting. And he said, don't worry about it. You just go, and don't worry about it. And I would go, and somebody would drive me home. I didn't have to have any control over that. Now, that was difficult because, you know, that whole unmanageable thing doesn't really work for me. I mean, I pretty much manage my life really well. Is time up? Okay. I didn't hear the bell. That's what I was. You used to have a clock here. Anyways. Well, thank you. Are you sure that's it? I want to thank you guys for being here tonight. I appreciate it very much. I hope that maybe there's somebody here that might have heard something of my story that may have resonated with you, that if a Jamoke like me can get sober, maybe you might have a chance to. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you all very much for this evening, and Merry Christmas.